What's up, my friend? Welcome to the Finding Direction podcast. My name is Stu Massengill, and I'm here every single week to bring you a passionate guest or message dedicated to helping you find your purpose so that you can live a life full of passion, fulfillment, and happiness. From the bottom of my heart, thank you for hanging out with me, and let's dive in. What's up, my friend? Welcome back to another episode here on Finding Direction. I am so excited for you to check out this week's episode. I sit down with Dr. Meg Jay, and to give you a little bit of her background, Dr. Meg Jay, she is a clinical psychologist. She is an associate professor of human development at the University of Virginia, who specializes in adult development and in 20-somethings in particular. She's earned a doctorate in clinical psychology and in gender studies from the University of California, Berkeley, and her books have been translated into more than a dozen languages, and her work has appeared in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Harvard Business Review, and on NPR and BBC. And her TED Talk, which you may have heard of, Why 30 is Not the New 20, is amongst one of the most watched of all time with over 10 million views. And if you've been hanging out with us in this podcast for any time, you will know that Dr. Meg Jay has truly had a large impact on my life. She's been one of the guests on the show that has always been on the list to bring her on the show because of the impact that she's had on my life. It's a book that I recommend to so many people. It's called The Defining Decade. You'll hear us talk about it. If you haven't read it, I encourage you, go get a copy. It will impact your life in a massive way. So go get that book when you have a chance. But for now, a few things you can expect on today's episode is we talk about how you hold the answers to start finding your purpose if you really look closely. We talk about identity capital versus identity crisis. And we also dive into why finding work and love are actually somewhat similar in a few different overlaps that Meg Jay discusses, Dr. Meg Jay, on this episode and in the book, The Defining Decade. So there's a lot of value in this one. I know you're going to enjoy it. If you have not yet, make sure you hit that subscribe button so you can join us every single week on the show as we help you get clear on finding your direction in life. And without that, my friend, we are going to dive into the episode. Here we go. Dr. Meg Jay, welcome to the show. It is an absolute honor to have you here with us today.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here, Stu. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, before we started recording, and our listeners are familiar with your book, I've shared your book on the show numerous times, but you know, just want to let you know how much I appreciate you from the work that you've done. It's had a really big impact on my life. So I really do want to say just thank you for what you've done. And for our listener that maybe is the one listener that doesn't know who you are. Yeah, and for our one listener who maybe doesn't know the name Dr. Meg Jay, could you share with them real quick just a little bit about, you know, who you are, what you do, and a little bit about your background?
Yeah, so I am a clinical psychologist, but maybe what's unique about me is that I specialize in 20-somethings, and so I've been doing that now, believe it or not, for 25 years. We're coming up on 25 years, so and what's interesting is that when I tell people I specialize in 20-somethings, they usually say something like, why would you do that? And then I pretty quickly explain that's really where all the action is. Like, this is when people are making life's biggest decisions and they're figuring it all out. So being in on that phase of life is just, it's really, to me, the only place to be. So that's what I do.
I love it. I love it. And one of the things you talk about in your book, The Defining Decade, right, which has been wildly, wildly successful, is this idea of, I believe it's 80% of your major life, like, decisions, right, are made before the age that you're 35. Yep. And I'm curious, one, that's just, I think, a really interesting statistic for anybody to know. It's like, by 35, you've made a lot of decisions that are going to kind of determine the trajectory of your life. And that's why, you know, the 20s is such a defining decade. But I'm curious, if we go back into your life, what would you say were like two or three of those defining moments for you that shaped your life into what it is today?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's the predictable ones. It was sort of what I decided to do for my career, who I decided to partner with for my life. And then having kids. So it's the ones, you know, these are sort of, these are the defining decisions that happen usually by the time you're around 35. And so I would say those sort of took my life in a specific direction that's different than a million other directions. Yeah. Currently, I live in Virginia. I'm at University of Virginia. I could live anywhere with my job and my awesome family and have a good life. So I like Virginia, but I don't feel like where I decided to live was a defining decision as much as what I decided to spend, you know, my time doing, what I decided to make my life's work, and who I decided to spend my life with. Those were the big ones.
Yeah. Heck yeah. I'm curious for you, you know, obviously you gave one of the most viewed TED Talks ever. Right. You know, it's over 10 million views. Your book's done extremely successful. And I think there's moments in our life where we have to make a decision. Right. And it's in those moments of decision that all of a sudden we create one of these defining moments that changes the trajectory of our life. You know, one thing you talk about that I've read about is like you make a decision in your 20s. It can make the difference between landing between Alaska and Fiji. Right. It's like those early changes cause big shifts later. And I'm curious, what was the moment, if you could take us to the specific moment where you made the decision to either, I apologize for this, but writing the book or doing the TED Talk, whichever came first, like what was the moment where you were like, you know what?
Okay.
I'm taking this on because it's a not a small project.
I'll actually go back further. I'll go back further and give you a defining moment. Also, I will answer your question. But what you're referencing is there's a metaphor that an old supervisor used to use with me, and I've borrowed it, now introduced it to millions of people, but that working with young adults, it's like working with planes just after takeoff. And so right after takeoff, like a small change in course is the difference between, you know, if you're leaving San Diego where you are, it's the difference between landing in Alaska or Fiji. And so that's what's so great, that it's an up in the air and turbulent time. Being in your 20s is, contrary to what you've heard, these are empirically not the best or happiest years of our lives. They're actually really hard, which is one reason I work in this space. But a lot of important stuff is going on. So all those big decisions are being made or about to be made. So with my clients and my readers, I get to get in front of those big decisions. The other cool thing about the study involved in that is that people only realized in retrospect what big decisions those were, like after the fact. So some of the ones I'm going to tell you about, you know, it wasn't like at the moment I knew I was in this glorious fork in the road and I went this way and I went that way, but I can look back now and see, oh, I remember the moment I decided I was going to go the direction of psychology versus something else. So I'll tell you that one, this, because this is, I think, relevant for a lot of your listeners, is I think I probably somewhat unintentionally did college the way you're, quote, supposed to, in that I went and I did not know what I wanted to do or who I wanted to be. I don't even think I had a good sense of like what I was good at particularly, but I did all the gen ed requirements and I took this and I took that and, you know, was kind of explored, you know, a lot of different topics. And I think for some reason I thought I should be a lawyer, and I cannot remember why. Well, actually, I will tell you why, is because I can win an argument with anybody, even if I'm wrong. It's not a great personality quality that I have, but I do have it. So I would have been a great lawyer. But at some point in college, I distinctly remember having this aha moment where I realized that I loved my psychology classes. I went to everyone, sat in the front, did all the reading, got A's on tests, enjoyed the studying. And then I had this, you know, rather obvious now aha moment that maybe I should do that. That, you know, why would I go do this other thing where I might make a lot of money and really emphasize the negative aspects of myself? Or I could go do this thing I really was good at and loved and felt really meaningful. So that was how I said, okay, psychology is my direction. But, you know, I think like for a lot of young adults, I had a direction, but I didn't know, like I didn't know, okay, I'm going to be a clinical psychologist. I'm going to specialize in 20-somethings. That actually didn't exist as like a thing when I was in college. Like there was no 20-something specialty, which is sort of another helpful factoid for your listeners is that most of the jobs that people wind up in, they've never heard of when they were in college. So when people are like, oh, what do you want to do? You're actually not capable of answering that question because you're going to wind up doing something you don't know about yet. So I think if you just head toward the light of your light, and that was for me, I was like, okay, I think that's psychology. So went to grad school in clinical psych. That to me felt like the degree that would kind of give me the most flexibility in terms of what I did with it, although I don't think it's the only road to being a psychologist at all. Getting to your question, I had been working because I had lived in college towns all my adult life, and then in grad school was in a college town. So I had tons of young adult clients. So I was basically specializing in 20 somethings, like without knowing it or without it being a thing yet. But those were all my people. And they kept asking me all the same questions of, you know, how do I get a job? And how do I have a healthy relationship? And how do I figure out what I should do with my life? And I had a lot of students. I was teaching at Berkeley because that's where I went to grad school. So I hung out there and was teaching and had a private practice. And I noted, and they were all coming in with the same questions. And I remember thinking, okay, like I need to be able to recommend a book because I'm like repeating myself with all the same stuff. So I went to Barnes and Noble back when people actually did that and like browsed in the bookstore, looking for a good 20-something book. And at the time, it did not exist. There was maybe a couple of silly, like, girlfriend's guide to being in your 20s kind of stuff. But there was no, like, I was envisioning, like, a smart book that would, like, really be helpful for people. So my aha moment was, well, I guess I have to write it. And, you know, I did get a PhD from Berkeley. That should be good for something. So that's what I'm going to do. So I wrote the book, and it became very popular and got a lot of press. And then because of that, Ted called and said, do you want to do a TED Talk? And I was like, well, does anybody say no to that? I don't think so. I guess I'm going to do it. So that's how all that happened.
That is so cool. I'm curious, when you had all these students that, you know, came in, and I think, and this is just one of the pieces that I just loved about your book and reading your story and just learning about your journeys. It's like, just like you said, you're having this one demographic come in over and over and over and ask the same thing over and over and over. And I'm curious if we could sort of expand upon that a little bit. Like, what would you say were like one or two of the most common questions that you continue to see people come in with?
I mean, I would say in general, I mean, there's an old Freud quote of, you know, work and love, love and work, that's all there is. I mean, those tend to be the two big sort of developmental preoccupations of 20-somethings of like, what am I going to do for work? Because people want to work, like they want to be productive, they have to pay the bills. So that's usually sort of the first thing of what do I do for work? How do I feel like, you know, I like what I do. I'm good at what I do. I'm proud of what I do. What I do has meaning. I mean, those aren't easy questions to answer. So that's a big question. That's not a one session question. And then the other piece, I mean, most people want love in their lives. So it's how do I find somebody at some point, you know, that makes me happy and feels like, you know, I'm not alone in the world. And then, you know, kind of the satellite questions that are all equally as important as how do I have friends and how do I cook and how do I, you know, how do I protect my mental health? I mean, but I would say it's usually around how do I work and how do I love?
So if we would dive into the work one for a second, you know, I'm curious, let's say we have, you know, a student, they come into your office and they go, Dr. J, I have no idea what the heck I want to do with my life. Help me. what's, you know, some of the stuff that you do to kind of help that person get a little bit clear on like answering the question of like, why am I here? What am I supposed to be doing with my life?
Yeah, well, that's sort of interesting about being a clinical psychologist is people think I have like a crystal ball, like I can see things they can't see. I mean, I all I have to work with is what the other person tells me. So I don't know any more than my clients know, but I'm hearing it maybe in a way they're not hearing it. And so oftentimes people say, I have no idea what I want to do with my life. I mean, I would have said that, you know, when I went to college. But I would start asking questions about, well, what have you done so far? And what have you enjoyed? And what are you good at? And, you know, have you ever worked before? And, you know, just trying to figure out, what do we know about you so far? Because, you know, if you're 20 or 25, you haven't done nothing. Like, you know something. Right. I mean, you may know you tried some things that you don't like, but now we may know a few other things to pursue. So I would try to help somebody, you know, I mean, you know, oftentimes self-reflection like just hasn't happened, and like people haven't listened to themselves talk out loud. And so through doing that, they can sort of say, oh, okay, there are, you know, a couple of paths that make more sense for me than others. And maybe I start with those. Before we started, Stu, you and I were talking about the JAM study, sort of a famous study about making decisions. And in a nutshell, the study is, if you show people like 30 flavors of jam on a table and they like, they're less likely to try the jam or buy the jam. They're just overwhelmed by the decisions. But if you give them like 4 or 5 jars of jam at a table, they're like, okay, let me check these out. And they'll try some and they'll buy one. So one thing that I try to help 20-somethings do is get from that, like, I could do anything, I could go anywhere, which like frankly isn't true, to, okay, let's narrow it down to like 3 or 4 or 5 you could actually go do and be good at and enjoy. Yeah. And then they can think a little more clearly, like, okay, well, I'll try this one next. Or, you know, if you're down to 2, talking about it in my office for a year is not going to get to the answer. What's going to get to the answer is you go try it, try one. And you'll find out, oh, that's awesome, I'm going to keep doing that. Like, I might have tried the psychology thing and been like, oh my gosh, too stressful, too emotional, can't handle it, and pivoted toward law school. That's not what happened. So I kept with the psychology thing.
Yeah. And I think it's an interesting thought too, where it's just like, if you have 6 different jars of jelly, right? Things that you're interested in. I don't know what the stats would be on this, but my hunch would be that probably 90% of people or more don't pick the right one the first time, right? Like, a lot of people, they're going to try something and it's not
right.
And you have to allow yourself to say, okay, I'm going to try 2 or 3 or 4 things that are probably not going to be the thing that I actually want to do. And that's okay, right? It's like a process of elimination to get to the thing that you really do enjoy.
Right. I don't know if you saw the Elon Musk's rocket blew up yesterday.
Yes.
And
he
was
that.
Saying, you know, well, we learned a lot about what we need to do next time. I mean, he's like the world's 2nd richest man, so he can have a $3 billion rocket explode and be like, call that a learning experience. But that was actually a perfect example of, that wasn't a failure. That was information.
Yeah.
That was a successful venture. And you know, so like now, in terms of how many hours I spend in the day, I spend more days writing and talking than I do seeing clients. And I did, part of me did always want to be a writer, but I'm definitely a nonfiction writer. Like, I needed to have something to write about. Like, I needed to go live my life and go get a cool job to have something to write about. So that's an example of a jar of jam that was really on the table for me, but it wasn't a jar of jam that I would have known what to do with at 22. Like, I needed to have a thing to write about. So that's another thing about the jars of jam. I think people kind of panic of like, oh no, if I pick this one, like that's it. Like, I'll never pick any more jam. I'll only get to have one piece of toast in my entire life and only get one kind of jam. Whereas you can add in, like, you know, now I'm a writer, a speaker, a psychologist, a teacher. I mean, I do like all kinds of stuff. But you only get that way by just starting doing something.
Yeah. What's up, my friend? I wanted to jump in here real quick and share with you something that has been a huge game changer in my life lately. If you know me, you know that I'm someone who's always looking for the next thing that helps me get just dialed in, focused, be massively productive, and really just get in this state that I like to call a flow, where your brain's talking to the right parts, things are connecting, and you are in just really this beautiful flow throughout your day. And recently, I came across a company that has been helping me with this in a huge way, so that I don't go through the day and have confusion. I'm not going through the day and, you know, doing the little squirrel thing where I know what I'm supposed to do, but I'm squirreling to something else, or just being distracted and not dialed in really. And the company, it's called Magic Mind. I was introduced to it through a good friend of mine. And now I want to introduce it to you, a good friend of mine. And really what Magic Mind helped me do, it's this little 4-ounce like elixir shot that you take in the morning. You can take it with your coffee. That's personally what I do. And what it does is it helps you start to get in that state of flow. Literally, that's exactly what it does. A few of the ingredients that I'll share specifically that actually are like the process behind what it's doing is one of the big ones that it has in it is matcha. And matcha, really what it does is it contains much, much, much less caffeine than coffee. But what it does is, interestingly enough, and I just learned this recently, it has a compound in it called catechins that basically extend the benefit of caffeine by slowing your body's ability to absorb it. So essentially what matcha is in a nutshell is it's like nature's extended release version of caffeine. And on top of that, it has something called Bacopa manieri, if I'm saying that correctly. And what that is it's a nootropic that improves your attention span, your ability to process and learn new information in your memory. So long story, all of those different things that I said, really, it just helps you get into a state of flow, be more productive, be more focused, and really just dial in for your day. And so because this has had an impact on my life, I asked the company if they would do something special for our listener. And honestly, they're going to do something just super, super cool, which is if you have an interest in, you know, learning about Magic Mind, you want to be more productive, you want to be more focused, you want to be more dialed in, and you want to find that state of flow for your own life, they're gonna basically hook you up for listening to the show and give you 56%. Yes, I said that correctly, 56% off of your first subscription order. And if you just want to do a one-time order, they'll give you 20% off. You can do either way, whatever works best for you. And all you need to do is if you go to magicmind.co, so not com, but .co/direction, and you enter the code direction20 at checkout, you will get both of those discounts. Again, the website is magicmind.co/direction, and just enter the code direction20 at checkout and you'll get 20% off your first time order or 56% off your fourth subscription order. And truly, from my heart to yours, my friend, I really do believe this will help you in life. I hope you believe it'll find direction, get clarity, and live in that state of flow, which honestly, life is so much better and so much more fun when you're living in a state of flow. So go check that out. Go dive into the link. Go check the product out. Use the discount and let me know how you like it, my friend. Back to the show. I love it. And sort of in that sense, could you share a little bit about the idea of identity capital, right? I think it's something in the lens of what we're talking about that kind of allows you to free yourself up from making the perfect or the right decision. It's sort of a unique way to look at like how every experience can technically be valuable.
Yeah. So identity capital, it's one of those cool kind of concepts that I'm the middleman on. I've gotten to introduce a lot of people to that idea. Not my original idea. It's buried in the research somewhere. You'd never come across it. But it's, to me, it was a great framing where I think a lot of young adults have heard about the concept of identity crisis. Everybody's heard of that. So people imagine like, oh my God, I'm supposed to like flail around and be lost and confused and tortured and miserable. And then I'm going to figure everything out. And then I go forward. And that's actually not the way it works. You know, that you don't figure it out and then you go forward. You actually go forward and then you figure it out because you've gone forward and tried something. Right. So I try to free people from this concept of identity crisis. They just like forget about that. That how about think about it like identity capital, that you're in your 20s, your learning curve in your 20s maps on to your earning curve in your 30s and beyond. And by earning, I mean more than money. I mean in terms of, you know, expertise and flexibility and autonomy and agency, all that stuff. And so to me, a 20-something's job is just to get out there and learn as much as you can and earn as much, quote, identity capital as you can. And those are just identity capital. It's just a cool word for the things that you do that add value to who you are. So they're the skills that you gain, the experiences that you have, the lessons you've learned, the degrees you got, the clubs you were in, but also just, you know, kind of who you are, who you become as a person in your 20s. And so you're kind of building those pieces of identity capital in your 20s. And then you kind of, they're just investments you make in yourself. And then by your 30s and beyond, you're sort of adding to those, trading on those, building on those that, you know, I look back, my pieces of identity capital were my college degree, my first job out of college, which we could talk about if you want, going to graduate school. Now, of course, it's writing books or giving a TED talk. But they're just things that you do that help people see, like, what are you about? What do you, what can you do?
Yeah. So let me ask you this then. Like, let's say someone, they have a few different ideas of what they want to do, and they go, I'm going to go do this one thing, whatever it would be. And they try it, right? Just like trying a jar of jelly. And they go, ew, this is actually like, I don't like this, but, you know, I need income. And so they kind of stay in it for a little bit. And let's say they start going down that road and they start to realize, okay, I actually want to do this other thing, but it's totally different from the thing that they're currently doing. What advice would you give someone like that who's maybe realizing they have a different interest, something they want to pursue, but from sort of a surface level doesn't really look like what they've done has been identity capital to help them in this next thing?
Right. Well, I think that when you're in your 20s, it's actually a really easy time to say, I'm going to go over here, I'm going to go over there. Like, people don't really expect everything to be this like perfectly linear path, that you have a lot more freedom for that now than you might later. So, I mean, whatever, right? I could have tried graduate school or something in psychology and been like, I don't know, it's like too emotional, too stressful. Let me try the law thing. I could have tried that and been like, ugh, well, that's not it. And then, you know, you'd be surprised in terms of how it might kind of all, quote, come together in the end. But that's not something I would worry about up front, especially in your 20s. It's just, I recommend that you don't spend a lot of time on anything where you're not getting any identity capital. But other than that, like, who knows how it will all add up and feed into each other. And, you know, you can get identity capital doing things that aren't. So my first job out of college, I worked as an outward bound instructor.
Yeah.
Which is definitely not the most ambitious thing you could do with a degree from University of Virginia. But I was burned out on school. I did want a job sort of, quote, in the psychology world, kind of, sort of, which I was working with special populations. But in that job, I learned a ton about leadership and self-sufficiency and planning and organizing and getting people from A to B with maximum adventure and minimum injury and death. And, you know, that all really paid off for me in terms of personal identity capital, even though it wasn't some like schmancy consulting job. So I would say, you know, now's the time to try the different pieces of identity capital. But if you're doing something that you're like, this has no value for me other than it's fun or it's cool or whatever, I'm not against that. I probably wouldn't spend like more than a year on something like that at a time without saying like, why, you know, can I do something cool and fun that does add value to who I am? I mean, those jobs exist.
Yeah.
You know, Stu, I'm going to interrupt you because you, without knowing it, you actually, I don't know if you were going to pivot to love, if you guys get into love on this show.
Yeah,
but
you
actually perfectly described, when you were talking about the job thing, you were like, I did a job, don't really like it, kind of hanging around in it. I think I should probably do something else, but it's kind of going to be tough. So if I hear a client saying that about a job, I'm like, you need to get out of there. You need to go find the job that does work for you.
Yeah.
And that same exact process and conversation is exactly my advice for love in your 20s, that all the time I hear people, they don't know what they want. They don't know what kind of relationship's going to make them happy. It's like the job thing. You got to go out there and try different things and find out. But when you're in a job or relationship you don't like and it makes you unhappy, you should leave. But I think when you're in your 20s, you think like, oh, whatever, I've got time. I'll just spend another year or two in this like dead end job or dead end relationship.
Yeah,
that is a horrible squandering of your defining decade, because you're in a great position, as you said, to just jump and do something else. And you might learn a lot or appreciate that other thing a lot more. That, interesting factoid, on average, people are going to have 9 different jobs by the time they're 35. Can you believe that? 9, which I probably did if I go back and count. So it's sort of a similar process with relationships. You're going to have different relationships, but same process of like, what are you learning? Like, you're learning, I like this, I don't like that. So I'm going to keep going in this direction, or I'm going to shift to that direction. Same process. So that by the time you're, whatever you're hoping for, late 20s, 30, 35, and you feel like, I've got love and work that work for me. Like, that's how you get there.
Yeah. Interesting. So with the relationship, it's just the same thing, right? You're going out there, you're trying things, you're tasting things, seeing what you like in a relationship. And then I think, I mean, there's difficult parts of both work and relationship, right? Work, you get tied in, you need income to pay your bills. In a relationship, you get maybe not financially tied in as much, but you get emotionally tied in, right? And then you get to this place of maybe this isn't the thing, but I'm emotionally sort of, you know, in this. I've been here for a year, whatever it is. Yeah. So how does somebody get over, like, let's say our listeners, how do they get over that emotional sort of, you know, push if they've realized they need a change?
Well, I will correct you. You said you get emotionally tied in, but not financially tied in. So 20 somethings are very likely to live with their partners. And when you live with your partner, you're financially tied in. And so that makes it harder to leave than you think it's going to. So, you know, I lived with people in my 20s. I know what of I speak, that you move in. You're like, whatever, it's cheaper, it's convenient, blah, blah. Well, it's cheaper and it's convenient until you want to break up, at which point it's expensive and inconvenient. Mm. And so I think just to really do a gut check for yourself of, you know, if I'm staying in a job or I'm staying in a relationship because it feels easier than getting out, that is not an adequate reason to tie yourself to a job or a person at your age. I mean, if you're like 60 and you have 10 kids, I mean, maybe we've got some different calculus going on, but like, that's not where you are in your 20s. Yeah. So I, at the big gut check question I ask my clients all the time is, if you're in a job or you're in a relationship where you're like, I don't want to be doing this in 5 years, then my question to you is, why are you doing it now? Why are you doing it now if you don't want to do it in 5 years? And what is your plan to get somewhere else? Or how much longer are you going to spend on this thing that you know you don't want to be in 5 years? You just don't want to deal with getting out right now. And I understand it's not necessarily easy, but it's still something that you're yourself saying, I don't want to continue.
Yeah. So cool. So if we continue to go through your life a little more, you know, obviously at this stage of your life, you've done, you know, quite a bit, as we talked about, right? You've written 2 books now that have done extraordinarily well. Your TED Talk's done well. You know, just have like a really, I would imagine, fulfilling life that you've created for yourself. Fulfilling, successful, right? Just like a good quality life, really. And I'm curious, when somebody comes to you. Yeah. And so when someone comes to you and they go, you know, what's your purpose? I'm curious, what's your answer to that?
Oh, that's easy. My purpose is helping people, 100%. I am all about, you know, making a difference in people's lives. And so that's what, and I think I forget that not everybody feels like they have that in their job, but every single day, like either through a conversation or a session or a book I'm writing or emails I receive, like I feel very connected to the fact that like something that I say or do could make a difference for someone in a good way. And that's, I'm very fortunate that I'm in a job where I experience that daily. And so absolutely, that's my purpose. And, you know, in 20 somethings in particular are my purpose. This is something interesting for, you know, kind of young workers out there that was surprising to me was that when I was first starting out as a psychologist, I thought like, oh, I'll, you know, hang out my shingle and I'll send that letter where I'm like, I see anyone, I do everything, because you think you're going to get a lot more business that way. And one of my supervisors was like, no, you've got to specialize, because then everyone will know what you do and they will send all of those people to you. Like, you'll just have a real clear professional identity and you get to make more of a difference that way, ironically. So my purpose, I mean, really since I saw my first 20-something client in 1999 has been to, you know, make a positive difference for 20-somethings. And it's, I'm actually working on another book right now. And my agent said, you know, do you want to go like for something bigger than 20 somethings? And I was like, what? There's nothing bigger than 20 somethings. They're the most important age group there is. So it's my purpose. I'm not changing it.
I love it. And can we get a sneak peek on what this next book might be about?
Yeah. It's young adult mental health. So it's 20 something mental health explicitly. So a lot, you know, mental health is very much implied in the defining decade, that it's, you know, it's sort of a book about how to get your life going and how to get a life that will make you feel happy and healthy. So mental health is sort of an implied byproduct, but it's not an explicitly mental health oriented book. So this is an explicitly mental health oriented book. And so I'm in the weeds on it right now. But
heck yeah. So cool. Well, we look forward to whenever it comes out, and we will share it with everybody we know, as we have with the defining decade.
Cool. Thanks. Do we'll tell people or people who are listening the defining decade, the new edition came out in 2021. It's the one with the gray cover. So if you're reading it, that's the one that you want. Gray cover 2021. So all the stats and all the material was sort of, you know, fully pulled up to the here and now, the pandemic and beyond here and now.
Yeah. And to kind of dive into that just for a second, I'm curious, what were some of the biggest updates, additions that you made? Because obviously it was, I believe it was about 10 years between when you did the new edition of the book.
Yeah.
What were some of the new things that you felt were important to add?
The biggest change and only change I would say in 20 somethings in the, you know, couple decades I've been doing this is technology. So when I wrote the first edition, right as I was writing it, my 20 something clients were joining this brand new thing called Facebook. And so, you know, in the first edition, I talk about, it was actually one of the first places that people, I was writing about Facebook and like what young adults were saying about how that felt for them, and that maybe it was a bit of a mixed bag, because I wasn't trying to collect data and do statistics and write, you know, laborious journal articles. I could just bust it out in a chapter. So when I was actually looking for data for that chapter, there was practically nothing. So it was just anecdotal. You know, my clients saying, oh, I'm going to join Facebook. And then they'd come in the next week and be like, oh, my God, I hate Facebook. So I kind of saw all that happen in real time. And so now, so I wrote about that in the first edition. And in the second edition, obviously now it's sort of same story, different platforms. I'm talking about Instagram and TikTok, but it's the same. Y'all are living it. You know, it's a mixed bag. It's not whether you're on social media, it's how you're on social media. And you've got to sort of, you know, do a gut check on that as well. But another cool chapter that I added was called 29 Conversations, and it's 29 conversations in theory for you to have with a potential partner, But actually, the most important person to have this these conversations with is yourself. Hmm. And it's never too early to start asking yourself what you're looking for, you know, whether you want to live here or there, whether you want kids or not, you know, gender roles and religion and sex. And so it's really not, I think people think of those conversations and they're like, oh, well, I have to have a partner and I have to be engaged to have those conversations. I mean, frankly, that's a little bit late to have those conversations because I've yet to meet the person who calls off the engagement because they don't like what they hear. So it's really never too early to have those conversations with yourself. And then you kind of know what you're thinking you want when you're out there, kind of looking for love.
Yeah. So cool. And one thing, you know, I know you mentioned, in, you know, just stuff that I did in research is in doing your research for that, a lot of the clients that you worked with that came in would spend upwards of 3 hours on social media a day. And I know one thing you talk about is in your 20s, spending your time wisely.
Easily. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's
easily. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't really know what to say about that other than like no judgment on social media, except I'm a very time oriented person. I mean, like, how people think of and use time is like actually a real underpinning of all my work, even though it's probably not as obvious to the reader as it is to me. So, you know, no judgment on social media, but if you're spending 3, 4, 5, 6, I mean, it's not unusual for somebody to say, yeah, probably 5, 6 hours a day on social media. That is a big chunk of your time that you're not spending on other things that might make you happier or healthier or might have more identity capital or might give you something a bit different or so. I would really think twice about that. So one of the first things I do with clients when they come in, it's basically a routine screening question at this point, is I ask them, how much time do you spend a day on your phone? They're like, I don't know. I say, no problem. Pull it out. We're going to see. And so we check their screen time. And I had a guy come in last year. And to his credit, he was very self-aware about this. He said his girlfriend had moved away. I mean, he was going to join her, I don't know, in a year or something. But he was like super lonely and really bored. He said he was very unhappy. And he said he was spending a lot of time on social media, on his phone, you know, on like YouTube and whatever. And so I said, oh, well, let's see how much. Okay, are you ready, Stu? 10 hours a day. So I was like, listen, dude, what do you like to do besides be on social media? So he said, I like basketball. I said, okay, so before I see you next, you need to go play basketball, you know, 3, 4, 5 times. He came back the next week. He'd been playing basketball. He thought I was a genius because I said, just get off your phone and go play some basketball. Yeah. And it made him much happier. So, I mean, I think we're all, I mean, I'm guilty of it. I'll read too much news and not have time for the gym. Like, we're all guilty of it, but you know, nobody's going to solve this problem for us. And for better or for worse, we've got to make sure that we're all making good use of the time that we have.
Yeah. I think it's a good reminder for, you know, our listener to say, hey, pull out your screen time on your phone right now and see like how many hours are you spending on your phone a day? And do we need to be, you know, changing that up? So,
I mean, it's, well, Dr. Meg, you know, time is very valuable at all stages of life. So, you know, not just your 20s.
Yeah. Very true. Well, Dr. Meg J, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. I'm curious, you know, for our listener that wants to hang out with you more, get to know you more, spend more time with you, what's the best place for them to find you, check out your work, and just dive into really what you do?
Well, I'm laughing because I'm not on social media. I'm a walk the talk gal. So I'm not, much to my publicist's chagrin, I'm not on social media. I'm a writer. I love to connect with people through my books. I'd love for somebody to say, I read your book. I felt like you were talking to me. It changed me. It made a difference for me.
Yeah.
Do that and you will, you know, make my day. So I would say read one of my books, but there's all kinds of stuff on the internet, podcasts or talks or whatever. I'm sure there's no end to the rabbit hole on the internet of stuff you could find.
Yeah. Amazing. So my last question I have for you is a question we ask to all of our guests, because we want to help people find direction, but we also believe in doing it through action. And so I would be curious for you.
Okay.
What would you say is one thing our listener could do in the next 24 to 48 hours to start finding direction?
Yeah. Okay. This is a kind of a cool exercise people might have done in other contexts. But remember, I was saying, you know, is there something you don't want to be doing in 5 years? And why are you doing it now? Those kinds of questions.
Yeah.
Is to write a letter to yourself 5 years from now. Well, write it now to your future self that's 5 years older than now, and have that future self person write a letter back to you and see what that conversation is about.
Love that. So cool. Well, Dr. Meg Jay, thank you again so much for being here. We massively appreciate it. And thanks so much for being you.
Oh, the pleasure was mine. Thanks for having me on, Stu.
Absolutely. Congratulations, my friend, on crushing it through another episode here on Finding Direction. Make sure you give yourself a pat on the back, a round of applause, because you are one of the few who is not willing to settle for less than a life that lights up your soul, and that is absolutely something worth celebrating. As always, I want to say thank you for joining me on today's episode. I hope you got massive value from Dr. Meg Jay, and as always, I hope you take some things from the conversation and start to apply them into your life. If you want to keep hanging out on the show, don't feel like you need to go anywhere. I have another episode coming up right after this, and you are more than welcome to hang out for that one to come up next. So other than that, my friend, have a wonderful, beautiful, outstanding rest of your day, and I will talk to you soon. Take care.